Hey, this is Chris, and thanks for listening to the Chime On podcast. We want to hear from you, so we implemented a system, and it's called Pod Inbox. So if you want to leave us a message, give us some feedback, or interact with us directly, go to www.podinbox.com/ChineOn. But dude, all right, tell me about you, Lorenzo. Thanks for coming, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad we can do this. Lorenzo from Energy Harness. You and I met, almost a month ago at this point over at the Fort Myers Chamber of Commerce thing. But
at the Tesla event.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was cool.
The presentation went a little long. But
it was a long presentation, but they had a lot to talk about. I mean, they've got cool. A lot of cutting edge information. We were happy to be there, happy to sponsor the event. It was definitely an exciting event, one that
dude, that was really
we
cool.
Have more of.
I was cool. It was cool to see like their whole process and everything. I didn't know like you could just buy a car right off your phone and all that stuff.
Makes it easy to buy a car, I guess.
I guess so. It's just the money part comes into play when you've got to like finance it and stuff. I don't know how that works, but it was actually
after you buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, this wasn't Amazon. Oh, this is more serious.
Oh, this is one click for my car.
Right. Right.
But, so we met, got to talking and you started telling me all kinds of things about lighting that I didn't know, and then kind of how you got into it with your background in bioengineering. So if you could tell everybody who you are, a little bit about the company, and then I kind of want to dig into the bioengineering background and then how that got you to the company, and we'll kind of go from there. Does that work for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Well, thank you for the introduction, first of all. It's definitely been an interesting course this last year and these last few years, bioengineering in general. The reason why I got into bioengineering just to start off is I had always seen a lot of really neat, really fascinating hips, knees come through my father's house. He was an orthopedic distributor in Ohio. He still practices a little bit. But he had all these, you know, implants
sure
coming in and out. I was like, what is that? And he's like, oh, this is a knee implant. We're going to go implant this into someone later on today. I was like, what? Super cool.
Really?
So I got to kind of take a look at that world and started asking him questions. And ultimately, I was like, I want to make this. I want to make these, and that's what got me into bioengineering.
Okay.
In the beginning.
So how old were you when you like when he started bringing this stuff home and you started actually like looking at it and being like, whoa, what is this?
It's a good question. I think I was maybe 13, 14, maybe 15.
Okay.
I started really paying more attention to it and I was like, oh, this is something I'm interested in. I wanted to know how they were made, maybe how to make them better. I've always been kind of, I guess, creative, entrepreneurial, which is also part of my recent degree. I had a minor in entrepreneurship, had a couple businesses while I was in school, which is exciting and fun. But once I got into college, you know, I started doing engineering, wasn't really sure actually at that point. I was like, wow, this is really hard. Engineering is not an easy major. But it was worth it. Switched my major to business, went back to engineering. And,
really?
Yep. Finished off strong with bioengineering. And I definitely don't regret it. It was some really interesting learning that I got to be a part of. And I think it helped me open up to so many different possibilities after college. I mean, bioengineering is so broad.
Yeah.
You do a little bit of electrical, a little bit of mechanical, the design component, the research that goes into it. All that was very interesting to me. But then the other side of things, I was never one to be behind a desk all the time.
Yeah.
And you probably noticed that from when we first met. I don't I'm not shy. I'm not afraid to talk to people. I love getting to know people. And that's kind of where the entrepreneurship side in me came. My buddy and I in college, we started a clothing company.
Okay.
Which we ended up no longer doing.
Sure.
But it was great experience, great know-how, great learning. While we were in college, there was a plastic straw dilemma a few years back. I'm not sure if you remember that. Yep. I started another company selling bamboo straws that were engraved to engraved logos of restaurants on the beaches. So that way they had another option as to no straws at all.
Okay.
It was basically a bamboo straw, had their logo on it. They could upcharge their drinks and basically sell this to their customer for, 50 cents more of their drink, cover the cost of the straw, and the customer has something to go home with that was a marketing piece.
Okay.
So that was kind of fun.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah. And it didn't end up panning out, probably because I was still doing bioengineering.
I could imagine doing all that schoolwork and trying to run a business. I'm not sure how you do it, but yeah.
It's over now. Yeah. At least that part of it's over now. It's never really over, but I mean, it was definitely a lot of work at the time.
Was that down
right
here?
For it at FGCU. Yeah.
Okay.
FGCU.
You were selling this to people out on Fort Myers Beach and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice. Did you ever end up selling any of them?
A few. Okay. I sold a few. It was too much for me to keep up. I was up late at night talking to China.
Really?
Yeah, that's where I got my straws from in the beginning.
Hello. I need to order 500 straws from you, please.
Right. I need the finest quality straws. I need the best. They need to be the very best. That's pretty cool.
You were working with distributors and manufacturers of these things overseas while you're in college.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. Just having to basically talk to these people, and you don't know what it's like over there. Not necessarily you can do as much research as you possibly can, but at the end of the day, you're speaking to someone in a totally different time zone, and the communication barrier is not always.
Yeah.
Great or is bad.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, I wouldn't take it back for anything, but fast forward a few years, graduated from college during the pandemic, which
Perfect
was this
time.
Last December.
Yeah.
So it was just, a mess like most students had. A lot of jobs, wouldn't hire. My buddy Nick was like, "Hey, we're working here at Energy Harness. I'm the engineer there. They're looking for salespeople." And at the time, I was looking for sales positions because while the engineering was really exciting to me, I kind of wanted to do, I didn't want to be behind a desk all the time. So I wanted to take that expertise and that knowledge of all the technical skills that I learned in college and apply that to a technical sales position where I could really do some good. And I definitely felt like after interviewing with Energy Harness and talking to them about not only their LED lighting, but also their UVC fixture, that there was some really great potential there. And I think it's potential to do good. There's a lot of potential in the business. And it's something that, people need right now, UVC-wise, air sanitation-wise.
Yeah, especially with all the COVID stuff going on. And that was part of what I wanted to talk to you about with this. We can kind of circle back to it, but definitely some of the UVC fixtures and different things like this and how that can, be used in schools, buildings, offices, all this kind of stuff to actually stop the spread of COVID. In quotes, I'll say this, I won't say you're saying this, but basically kind of killing COVID. But I was looking at some of the stuff that you sent me from the CDC mm-hmm. and the way that the particles work and the cleansing works is it doesn't eliminate the particles, but it seems like it basically kills that piece that is contagious and
right.
things like that. Do I have that even remotely correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It's you're very, very accurate, very close. And killing is not the right term.
Sure. That's why I say quotes.
We put the air quotes around it. We do say our device is the COVID killer, or at least it's been named that by
sure.
news articles and things like that. So that's why some people may know of us, but we actually aren't killing the pathogen. What UVC does is it denatures the protein within the virus itself.
So what does that mean?
So when the virus is active, it has these binding receptors on the outside of it. They're proteins. They make up the virus itself.
Okay.
When UVC works, and this is assuming that everything is correct in a UVC device, the actual UVC, what it does is it denatures things. I mean, just think about when you walk outside, when you're, I'm gonna move this up, when you're exposed to the sun, things like that. I mean, you get exposed to UVC every day, whether you know it or not. That's why you put sunscreen on. It's to protect your skin, because what it does is it's damaging your skin. Same premise, but on a very, very small scale with the microorganisms, with the virus, with pathogens. So okay. It denatures that protein and it spits it back out as an inactive pathogen or virus.
So you get away from, you kind of get away from the business of removing from the air versus just basically like pulling out a piece of the puzzle that infects people. It basically right. like, it's like almost like spade or neutering like all these particles so they can't
yep.
transmit or actually like latch onto you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Basically the virus is, it's effectively dead, but it's not actually dead.
Got it. It's not absent all of a sudden. All right. these particles are still there, but now it's not in a way that actually can transmit to humans. It's like neutering these things. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So, oh man, a million questions from here. But so I was looking at some of this stuff, and I'll be honest, I'm a little bit over my head with like the science behind it. But basically, it seems like they put this kind of towards the top of the room, right? And then the air kind of filters out. And so through these types of filters, you can have, they say like within an hour, roughly an hour, you basically have fresh, like clean air from start of 1 hour to the next. By the time all that goes through the filter, like all the air in that room would have gone through that filter.
Right. Is so, that,
okay.
Yeah. You're pretty much hit the nail on the head there. The point of these devices, and I will note that there are many different things that are marketed right now
sure.
for inactivating, for preventing COVID, and just improving overall indoor air quality, which is really the goal that we should be thinking about here.
Yeah.
Not just coronavirus, because coronavirus is a big portion of it. Don't get me wrong. That is what I think heightened all these concerns for indoor air quality. But indoor air quality was not improved. It hasn't improved. In fact, it's only gotten worse since we've been here for the past few decades, and it's shocking. But
so what do you mean by that? Because I understand that COVID is the primary topic, and actually COVID might actually be a good lens for us to talk about this through, because it's on top of mind for everybody.
Right.
Whatever your end goal may be is to get back to normal, whatever it might be. But I think using this as kind of a lens is good. But what do you mean by like overall air quality has like deteriorated over the decades?
Well, when you look at, there's a lot of different factors that affect air quality. Some of those factors you can and you can't control. The ones that you can control are things like paint on your walls. So like lead paint, poisoning, things like that.
Sure.
Products that you use that go into the air. Those could be damaging to the overall air, and you're breathing that in constantly, and that's just going through an AC unit that recycles the air. There's building materials, which you can't really, you can't influence.
Like they used to use asbestos and all that kind of stuff. Is that, you mean like that? Like things that you wouldn't even know are...
Right. Depending on who's building the building, they may or may not be putting in the highest grade materials, or the best materials for a certain location. I mean, in Florida alone, we deal with a lot more, I would say, mold, humidity, not necessarily pollutants based off of geographical location, but pollens, dust, all those things. Those all contribute to your air quality.
Yeah.
Radon was always like a big concern too. Radon was...
What's radon?
It's a gas that is not good to breathe and it can kill you.
Okay.
So they have specific tests to test for radon in your house and your business, whatever it may be. But overall, all those things combined have led to poorer and poorer air quality.
Okay.
So there's been a need, and now since COVID has kind of surfaced and this problem has arisen as of, 2019, 2020.
Sure.
We have to address the things that we can address.
Yeah.
Which are those, how are we going to prevent these air particles that get in here that we don't have any influence on, like dust, mold, pollens, pollutants, all that stuff, pathogens. We can't stop them from entering.
So we're talking about indoor air quality here, and right. there's this bucket of things that you can control: paint, building materials, all this kind of stuff. The way that you actually filter the air, this kind of stuff, and then the external pieces, pollen, dust, anything coming in from the outside that you really don't have control over. What you do inside doesn't impact or stop that from coming in. But then you just have the ability to kind of either mitigate or deal with it,
right?
Pretty much.
Right.
Okay. All right. So that makes sense. So you're saying that for a long time, this stuff has been deteriorating anyway. And so in a way, COVID is just something for us to finally talk about it through a particular lens.
It's like the tip of the iceberg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. So... All right, so then what do I need to, like, what's the next question from here? Like, what is the next thing to know about, I don't know, either these materials or, like, dealing with this kind of stuff? I mean, I don't even know what the right question is to ask. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's I guess what you're trying to, like, to ask is kind of what do we do? How do we combat this? There are many, like I was saying, there's many things on the market that are out there that basically say, we take this out of the air, we do this, we take out VOCs and bacteria and all these other things. But how do you know which one's effective, which one's not? And so I kind of want to give a background on, first of all, why Energy Harness even came up with the idea of the UVC fixture. Second of all, what's out there, and then third of all, how can you verify this, and what should you look for as a consumer or just a homeowner? These things are important.
Yeah,
there's so much out there, so much misinformation, I would say, that's out there.
For sure,
probably everything around
everything. Yeah.
Coronavirus and just any kind of political topic today.
Yeah. Well, it's all become political, and so thank you for kind of recentering my thoughts, because that is more of what I wanted to talk to you about, is what do we do about this? Because like you said, we were talking yesterday, I think, and talking about, speaking with schools and school districts and things like that, and you have this whole debate about kids wearing masks or not wearing masks, and you talk to parents that are pissed because their kids have to wear masks and pissed because other kids aren't wearing masks. And
yeah, where do you
and what use is it to be, oh, I'm fucking pissed about this and because this person did this and this person, because you're probably looking at two different sets of facts or the same sets of facts from two different people that are basically pitting you against each other because they say this person sucks, and then the other side says this person sucks. So part of why I wanted to talk to you about this is just on the initial thing that we talked about with some of these systems, it seems like a way that we can kind of nullify this nonsense, right? If you can do something where you put in these kind of filtration systems, like, can it be a solution where, like you said, it kills these, I'll call them pathogens, I don't have a better word for it, but in the air, so that way it doesn't matter who's, you know, maybe a carrier for COVID, or, you know, if that's in the air, can we make a safe environment for schools, for people going back to work? Like, where does this all fit in? And maybe stick with what you were planning to talk about on, like, the history and how you got into it, but I definitely want to address some of that stuff.
Absolutely. I think, you know, whether we address it or not, it's still going to be a political debacle, debate, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
I think it'll always be that way. But from the research I've done, from previous research that is years and years ago, there's one thing I think most people can agree on, and it's that we don't currently, or at least we're not, it's not obvious of a solution that works for everyone.
Sure.
And not getting too political about it, but masks they work to an extent. Vaccines, they work to an extent. I think they're all good measures. Do I think either any one of those are the solution? No. I don't think that sure. one thing is going to solve all the problems. And in fact,
how dare you?
Yeah, right. Yeah, even UVC. I mean, you got to take the precautions necessary to protect yourself. I mean, I had coronavirus. It sucked. It was horrible.
Yeah.
Luckily, I have antibodies now, which are great. I don't know how long those are going to last for, but you know, we'll see. And I guess the point that I'm getting at is, if you look at the CDC at the start of this was unsure. I think they were trying to give as much information as they could based off what they knew. Now, the CDC has taken more measures. They have more data. They have more know-how. And so what they recommend is a layered approach.
Yeah.
So you need, or a layered prevention, I could say that. So that includes, you know, your social distancing. That includes your mask wearing. That includes sanitizing. That includes ventilation. And that's where UVC comes in.
Sure.
So all those things put together are going to put you in a very good spot for preventing the spread of anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the flu probably this year is down because people were wearing masks. Now, granted, let me tell you a little bit about masks, just kind of the background of that.
Sure.
I understand why there's such a large debate about masks, and I'm not a doctor. I'm not a immunologist. I don't have all the answers. So
sure.
Anything that I say, take with a grain of salt, because, you know, I'm not the end all be all for coronavirus. So don't do that.
For you listening at home.
Yeah, exactly. But masks, they are good at filtering large particles. When I say large, that's like not large, tiny
sure.
particles.
But when
surgeons
you're talking,
wear masks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Surgeons wear masks in a surgical setting because for two reasons. They don't want to give the patient anything, like sneeze, cough, spit, whatever it may be. And if the patient has any disease, they don't want to get that themselves. Excuse me. So the reason they wear those masks all the time, and people are like, well, surgeons wear masks all the time, so you should wear a mask all the time. Well, they're in a setting that is...
calls for it.
Yeah, it's pretty important not to infect your patient and also not to be infected by your patient.
Well, and that can happen. And I was actually talking to my wife about this. So she knows somebody who is like a surgeon, and he ended up getting hepatitis because, like, I guess he wasn't wearing his mask and, like, something happened. And I think, like, either blood or something, like, squirted his, like, mouth or up his nose or something. And he got, like, fucking hepatitis.
Yeah, blood is squirting in a surgical room. It's kind of a common thing for a surgical room. And the reason they wear those masks is not because there's airborne particulates that are just coming into their breathing way. It's because of things like that, fluid.
Yeah.
And even particles carried on fluid, small, small particles like humidity, things like that, or when you sneeze, that's considered a like stuff carried on a water particle, basically. Yeah. Those are large. So your typical surgical mask can handle that.
Yeah.
Now, when you go down to the microscopic size of coronavirus, it's tiny. It's 0.1 microns, which is 10 to the negative sixth. So that's a lot of zeros.
Yeah. I've got a few microns over in the other office. So yeah, totally familiar.
Yeah.
With microns.
Microns, dollar bills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I don't know what a micron is, but
it's a unit of measurement.
So it's like infinitely small, basically.
It's very, very small.
Okay.
So like mold, bacteria, they're large compared to a virus.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So those masks, those same masks and the cloth masks that everyone wears, they're not rated for filtering.
Yeah.
These tiny, tiny particles.
Yeah.
It's like walking through a doorway, you know?
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm talking about with this is like, there's so much craziness about it, but there is no like anybody trying to say like, hey, you need to wear an N95 mask. We're going to provide these N95 masks. Like almost nobody wearing a mask
right
is wearing the N95s, at least that I see around here. It's the fishing thing that you pull up. It's a bandana. It's the
right.
surgeon's mask.
And the N95s, they are rated for very small particulates like that.
Yeah.
So, they're a good choice.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's just, if there was an enforcement, like people pushed just that and they're like, no, you've got to use that. In my head, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not that. It's just,
right.
you have to put something over your face. And because they said you got to wear a mask. Like, that's what
right.
it feels like. When you get told this stuff, it's like, because they said. It's like, no, wear an N95 because it blocks 95% or whatever the science is behind it.
Right.
Like, I can wrap my head around that. But, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, in a nutshell, you know, if you're going to do something, do it the right way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before you want to, like, shut the whole world down again.
Yeah.
But, so that's where I want to see, how is this a solution to that? I know you talked about the layered approach. Definitely, you have the masks, especially if you're using the N95s.
Mm-hmm.
Those are part of that layer. Everything else, well, we'll let people kind of debate about that. I've got my opinions, but where does this come in terms of where does this piece of the layer come in, or where does this layer
UVC?
Come in? Yeah,
yeah. So the UVC. So you know, you're social distancing, your mask, your sanitation of surfaces. That's all very important. But the way, you know, a lot of these pathogens, including coronavirus, they move from one person to another is through the air. So the solution can't be always a surface solution, or it can't be, you know, these things. And whether or not you're vaccinated or not, you can still pass this. So we have to treat the problem, which is our air.
Yeah,
we have to treat that if we're going to prevent these things effectively. And that's where UVC comes in. That's where ventilation as a whole comes in. Now, UVC, not everyone knows or not everyone is aware of how UVC works. I think some people are, some people aren't. They think that UVC is just, you know, it just obliterates everything.
Sure.
You're like, yes, give me that. I'll take some of that.
Yeah.
I just obliterate all the air in my house. but what it does is it really, in order for UVC to be effective, it has to have certain parameters.
Okay.
And not everything has certain parameters, or at least, you know, there are claims of things having, you know, doing this, doing that. Have they tested it? A lot of the times, no.
Okay.
But basically, in order for UVC to be effective, there needs to be a good amount of time exposure. So the actual UVC light needs to be exposed to, say, the coronavirus particle in the air for X amount of time, for longer than like a split second.
Okay.
Like it doesn't happen that quick, especially if you're get further away. So time, exposure, and distance play a role in the dosage, which that creates the dosage, so how much you're giving to this particle at once. And that combined as well with the wavelength, that's the third thing. Time, exposure, dosage, distance, wavelength.
Okay.
Those three things all put together in one unit is what creates an effective UVC. Without that, you're not effectively doing what a device or UVC is intended to do.
Okay. So I got a follow-up question on this, but like what is that length of time that it needs to be exposed?
So it goes hand in hand with the distance.
Okay. So so maybe the better question is, what is the actual mechanism used that you guys use for getting the air to this filtration system, and what is the size of the space that it's in, and then how long does that air need to be in there? Maybe that will answer all of those questions.
Yeah, I can just kind of allude to exactly what we do.
Sure.
and how we've tested it to prove it's efficacy. Basically, our unit, it's a 2x4 unit. It pops into a ceiling grid, so it's commercial grade. So what we're looking at right above us, it can fit right into that, and you can turn it on, and it works with your lights. So when the lights are on, UVC unit's on, it's pulling in air. When it pulls in the air, it has about, the UVC is probably about this thick, 2.5-3 inches thick. It's not very thick.
Okay.
It was designed like that on purpose. So that way when the air comes in, it gets hit by that UVC light very, very close. There's not much distance in between that light and the particles.
Sure.
And then while it's in there, I think we've tested it to be almost like 2.7 to 3 seconds of air, that air from the start to the finish inside the unit. So it has about almost three second exposure time to the UVC.
Okay.
For the particles.
Sure.
So that kind of gives you like an idea of
how long it's going through that band of light, basically.
Right. At this far away, you know, couple inches.
Okay.
So that plays into the role of its efficacy. So its efficacy after that at a 260, it's between 265 nanometers and 275 nanometers. And you might ask, what is a nanometer?
Yeah, what is a nanometer?
Yeah. So you have an invisible spectrum of light. You have certain wavelengths and frequencies. There's visible, there's infrared, and then there's the UV light. There's UVA, UVB, UVC. In the UVC, we look at what's called the germicidal irradiation light.
Okay.
And this has been tested before. This has been used before. And I'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, you even told me, and I looked it up on the CDC site, but they had it since the 50s for tuberculosis. It was since
exactly.
the 50s. You said the 50s, and then you I think it was the 90s. It was actually the 50s.
No, I said the mid 1900s.
Which was correct.
Yeah, right. I was correct.
You nailed it. Sorry, I took you off your train of thought.
No worries. You're right. It's been used before. So germicidal irradiation is the wavelength of light that's most effective in killing germs and pathogens. So that wavelength, if you looked at it, it's like a bell-shaped curve.
Okay.
At the peak of the bell-shaped curve is the most effective wavelength, or nanometers. And that happens between 265 and 275 nanometers.
And that wavelength, that is UVC?
That is UVC, yep.
Okay. So you have, UV is like a
you
general...
You can control the wavelength of that particular light. So UV has its own, basically, spectrum of wavelength.
And so there's three wavelength brackets, we can call them.
Yeah, if
A,
you
B,
split
and
it
C.
Up, I have a graph that would actually show it and explain it really well.
Okay. I'll include it in the show
notes. Hard to picture right now, but
yeah. I'll include it in the show notes because I actually kind of understand what you're saying. Once you get to a certain frequency of light you get into this UV range, and it's a specific range in there that's the most, seems to be the most effective.
For killing germs. Exactly. The germicide irradiation. So you have to have that combined with the time, combined with the distance to be effective. So ours is about 270, 265 nanometers.
Okay.
And that is optimal for killing germs. So all those things combined give us a 99.998% efficacy in inactivating COVID.
Okay. So, all right. So then, so you've got, say, 99.9. You've got that efficacy level of, you know, deactivating COVID, I'll just call it. That's the only way I can think of it. But you've got, so you've got this 99.99% deactivation of COVID, and that is in that space, right?
Right.
So you're measuring it through the actual unit. So what does that relate to, let's say, a room like this? I don't know how tall these ceilings are. This, maybe, what, 9.5 feet, 10 feet, something like that?
Probably like, 8, 9 feet.
Nine feet. And then this is 12 by 15. So if you had a unit like that, what would it mean in practical terms to say that you have basically inactivated 99.99% of COVID in a particular room? And like, what is that? What's that timeline look like? I know this, I'm just throwing you on the spot in here.
Those are good questions.
What does that look like in a room like this? And then what does that kind of look like in a cafeteria or a classroom?
Right.
You know, where do these kind of come into play?
Yeah, those are great questions. First of all, I commend you for asking them.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So to answer those questions, in this room in particular, we're looking at, you know, it's a smaller size room. So effectively, for energy harness, for example, we have two different size units. We've got the standard 2x4, which is for larger rooms for 700 square feet. And then we have the slimline, which is for 300 square feet.
Okay.
Now we say 300 square feet and 700 square feet because in about a regular ceiling height, which this may be even considered kind of a lower on the lower end, anywhere would be basically between 8 feet and 12 feet is where you want the height of the fixture to be, because then it's pulling the air and pushing it back out to our breathable space. You're not cleaning the air on the bottom of the floor.
Sure.
Not cleaning necessarily the air at the very top of you want to clean right in the middle. So with those parameters, we've found that 300 square feet for the slimline, 700 square feet for the active airflow, 2x4, is optimal for turning the air and cleaning it twice every hour.
Wow. Okay. So if you're, so in this case, it would be the slimline, right? Because of the size of this room. So this room is maybe 260 or 270 square feet, something like that. So within, almost every half hour, it's recycling all the air in the room.
Exactly.
So in that way, it kind of deals with that viral load aspect.
I would say that, you know, it's not focusing on all the air.
Sure.
Because it doesn't have to filter all the air in the room. It has to filter the majority of the air in the room.
Well,
we're breathing.
And that's what I'm saying. That's where the viral load aspect comes in to play, right? Because that seems, from everything that I've read over the past year and a half that all this has been going on, it seems like that is the real, again, not a doctor, but like that seems like the real differentiator, whether or not a large group of people get COVID or not, is that viral load level, how long you're exposed to it, pretty similar to how long the virus is exposed to the, you know, the UVC light.
Right.
It's how much, how close,
happens
how
in 15
long.
Minutes.
It's 15 minutes.
That's usually what they say. At least that's what the CDC says.
Okay.
If you're exposed to someone who has COVID in the same airspace for 15 minutes, that's usually how long it takes to transmit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So then
it's not
that
a long time.
No, that's not very long at all.
Yeah.
So with that aspect, it's you can, So just curious, I know this might be like a hypothetical number, but like mm-hmm. what percentage of the air actually gets recycled? If it's not all of it and it does it twice an hour, what roughly percentage of the air gets recycled?
Well, eventually all the air gets recycled. Eventually it all gets recycled because you have the AC pushing and filtering the air as well. So when you have the fixture that goes into the ceiling, an upper room germicidal fixture.
Sure.
The AC will push the air. It circulates. AC, that's what an AC does. It pushes air into the room, pulls air back out. So that circulation will turn the air and it'll help the fixture pull all the air into the room.
Okay.
Or pull all the air through the fixture and clean it.
Okay, got it. So this is something that goes into the AC fixture and
No, it doesn't go into the AC. Different. And there's a reason why we do that. Because if you go into the AC, now you're having to deal with the quickness of the air from the AC unit, not from the fixture itself.
So you'd end up having to have a much bigger light because of the time that the speed that it's going through.
Well, it wouldn't matter how big your light was.
It just wouldn't be fast enough.
It would, yeah, the particles going by the light. So if I put it like this, and I'm just stating the facts basically in terms of how UVC works. So there are a lot of AC units that are putting in these UV lights. And actually, you probably already have UV light in your AC unit for the mold in the drip pan to prevent mold from building up.
Sure.
And if you put a UV light into an already existing AC system, so you say we have a column, which is your AC. You've got filters here. You've got the air that's blowing through. You stick a tube, a UV light tube, and that air is coming up through the filters, flying by the tube at very fast speed because an AC has to handle a lot of air, push a lot of air. I mean, it's rated for tons of air. That's how they rate your AC based on the size of your house.
Okay.
How many tons of air can this this AC handle? Because you need to push that
much. I never thought of it like that, but yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it's going through quickly. I think it's like 45, I don't know, meters per second or something like that.
Holy shit.
It's quick. I don't even know if that's the right way to measure
it. But it's a lot. I until you started talking about the air circulation in the room, I've never thought of it in this way, but
well, the air's not coming in here that quickly because it's dispersed throughout all the building. But from where you put in a UV light, where they intend to put it through, it's going through quite quickly. So you never have that time exposure and you never have that closeness because you've got this big column of air and you have one tube. So what about these particles on the side here? Only the ones that are here really get affected, but do they even get affected that much? No, because there's just not enough time in that light.
Got it.
Exposed to that light.
Okay. Okay. I see what you're saying.
That's the problem that I think we're seeing. And unfortunately, I think people don't recognize that. They don't know that that's the kind of the facts behind UVC and how it works. So, you know, people want clean air. They're concerned.
Yeah.
They go to these places and they recommend these devices, these UV lamps for your AC. And not saying that it's wrong, but it's not doing what I think you always intended it to do. I'm not saying that it doesn't clean the air. In fact, the filters on the bottom that's constantly being hit by UV, that's probably helping those filters being cleaned from other debris. But everything else flying by it,
in terms of the size of like something like COVID, it's just going to be too fast.
Right.
And unless it's literally right there and they happen to be the whatever percentage of particles that goes right into the light and goes right around it.
And you may think like, oh, well, what about HEPA filters? HEPA filters will slow down the air, which they do greatly. And part of my research showed that, you know, HEPA filters are great. They are great at catching particles, especially even if you have a correctly rated HEPA filter, you can catch very small particles like COVID. But if you put that into an AC system, it creates a lot of strain and a lot of pressure on the system.
Yeah.
Because now the AC has to work harder to push that same amount of air through this filter. And, you know, you're still not addressing necessarily the air in the room.
Yeah.
You're addressing the air that's going through the AC into the room.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like I said, there's a lot. It's a lot to think about. Already, if you were to compare filters, a MERV filter does a really good job, and it's what typically what people use. It's very well rated, and it doesn't put that strain on your AC system.
Yeah.
So therefore, you're not having to pay higher bills. Your AC will last longer. You don't have to pay expensive AC repairs. You know, those are things that people should think about or should understand at least when they're making these decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So then this thing is a separate thing from the AC. So how does this, something like this work? I understand the concept pretty much in a room like this. How would something like this work, let's say in a classroom or like in a cafeteria? I'm just thinking of different places, and you could even think of this for like an office with a bunch of cubicles, things like that.
Right.
How would a system like this be implemented? It seems like you'd have to have multiple of these in a larger space.
Right.
Yeah. How does that work?
It's very similar to what we would do for this room. I mean, you take this room, you figure out what's the size of the room? What's the height of the ceilings? Those are the first two things that you would have to look at. Once we determine if the ceiling height is appropriate, and what the room size is, we can determine how many fixtures we need, whether we need to hang them or whether we can put them straight into the ceiling. For instance, in Indiana, we recently did a school where we chain hung the slimline units, the smaller ones, even though the room was large, but we chain hung multiple units in a row to a level that was more appropriate to reach and clean the air of below that the students are breathing. So it can be done in like large spaces like that.
Yeah.
But those have to be considered. And then the other consideration that is always important is how many people are coming in and out of the room. Like, for instance, we're in a room, it's just you and I right now. How many fixtures do you really need in a room for one or two people?
Yeah.
The concern is like hotspot areas.
A few hundred
if you call
people.
Them. Yeah. Or like if you're in a waiting room, you know, if you're at a doctor's office and you're sitting next to people coming from all over.
Yeah.
You don't know where those people are. I mean, no one wants to get sick, of course. So in places where I think it makes the most impact is where they really should be, in a classroom. I mean, there's students everywhere in a school. So
yeah.
you have to do it in every classroom.
Sure.
Lunchroom, you know, locker room, whatever. It should be in those areas.
Yeah, if you were going to do it in a place, it would be those areas, because you got a bunch of kids sitting in the room for a long period of time. You got the same air going through. Okay. I mean, that makes sense. It's like you'd want to be like strategic with where you deployed it. It wouldn't need to be everywhere, but it needs to be
right
in all the right places.
Right. Exactly. Like, you know, you wouldn't probably want to put it in all the hallways. Oh, excuse me. I'm gonna drink some water. You wouldn't want to put it in all the hallways.
Yeah.
Because that's like trying to, I mean, first of all, the hallways aren't always full of people. You know, short periods of time, they're full of people. But rooms like conference rooms, like large gathering, break rooms, things like this, you know, that's what you should really focus on. And then, you know, take those other precautions, this sanitizing of surfaces, that's still important. The mask, the social distancing, just, you know, you don't have to be this close to someone when you're talking to them. As much as you may want to be or don't want to be, you know, that's not a necessary thing. Just think about it. You know, those things are important, especially the sanitation of surfaces. Although this is primarily, coronavirus is primarily spread via the air, they'll land on these surfaces. They die quicker on surfaces. So it's not as
sure
important. It is important, but it is not the first line of defense, not the first concern. So yeah, sanitize your surfaces, do routine cleaning. Should do that anyways.
Sure. Be healthy too. Try to like, I know it's not stupid or, you know, people kind of poo poo it, but it's try to be healthy too. Like protect your body as much as you can. Like I've been taking D3 and zinc, and then I actually just found this out that apparently in order to take zinc and have it actually like work and be absorbed by your body, you've got to pair it with some other things. Apparently blueberries have something that helps actually break that down and go in. So yeah. I've been pairing that with some smoothies that have a bunch of blueberries.
There you go.
So
you got it going.
I'm trying, man. We got the baby on the way, so I gotta protect on that side.
Yeah.
But,
it's a big concern. I mean, yeah. Especially for, you know, being a new father, you want to be as safe as you can be. And I think a lot of parents share that concern.
Yeah.
On the point of, you know, zinc and all this other stuff, you know, how zinc actually metabolizes in your body.
Yeah, all right, tell me about this.
There's other things that are like that too. And I'll just, for instance, give you one example. Before I graduated from college, I was working at a local olive oil store called Estero Bay Olive Oil.
Okay.
Give them a good shout out.
Shout out to Estero Bay Olive Oil.
Yeah, they're in Coconut Point. Great place. And it was really exciting and fun to work there, especially because I got to learn about how real olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, affects the body. Now, this is totally separate, but
let's get into it. This shit interests me. I like all this stuff.
There's tons of interesting, just tons of stuff to learn out there. But for instance, if you had a carrot, there is, I forget what the name of the, it's going to kill me. I forget what the name of the actual vitamin that you get from carrot, from eating carrots. You know, it's supposed to be very good for you. However, it doesn't actually break down in your body without having some kind of fat. So you have to eat like fat to help it break down. And olive oil was a good choice to have it with because it's a healthy fat.
So olive oil is a fat?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
okay.
So don't drink too much olive oil. Although it's good for you if you get the right stuff. But yeah, you have to. It's honestly overwhelming. Probably
that's
just to think of all this stuff, and
it's kind of cool though. Like when you start paying attention to that stuff, I guess it does make sense because really food is just a bunch of compounds kind of put together and bound together the way nature kind of figured it out, or I guess in our case when we process foods, it's kind of the same thing. So it makes sense that certain mechanisms took place to kind of bind all this stuff together. It does make sense that there would be certain mechanisms that you could put in place that actually pull it apart in an effective way.
Right. If you're trying to do something like take zinc and get the most out of it, you want it to be optimal. So you're looking for the most optimal solution to get that into your body to help you.
Yeah.
The blueberries. I didn't know that actually. That's the first time I've heard of that.
I don't know if it's true.
I have to look it up now.
I'll actually go and look it up. Now that I've said it, I have to actually look this up.
Follow-up video on zinc and blueberries.
Yeah. We're going to do a 3-hour-long podcast on blueberries and zinc and different smoothie options that you can make, things like that.
That's right.
But so how'd you end up at the olive oil store?
How did I end up at the olive oil store?
Yeah. Just needed a job in college?
I worked a lot through college. So, and it was just good to work through college.
Yeah.
I felt like it definitely helped me be organized and I wanted to have my own, you know, money coming in. I applied. We walked into the store, my girlfriend and I, who is, if you want to ask someone about food, she knows. She's very smart when it comes to what you should eat, having a healthy, balanced diet. She's very, very great at that. She's got a page called Wellness Sister.
Really?
If you want to look it up.
Wellness Sister?
Yeah, hopefully she doesn't get mad at me for that. But
we're shouting it out on the podcast.
Yeah, that's cool. Right. So she's yeah, we so walked in there together, okay, basically to the store in Coconut Point, and we were like, wow, this store is amazing. First of all, you walk in there, it's immaculate. There's a tree in the middle of the store. Yeah, it's cool. They got all these big fusties of olive oil on the side. Then they have
like balsamics
okay, on this side, and there's tea in the back. It was a lot. But you walk in and you learn about olive oil, and I was like, wow, this is cool. I could do this while I'm in school.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, interviewed, and it was a very fun job. I learned a lot about the benefits of olive oil and all that, and
yeah,
how it's made and the differences between good olive oil and bad olive oil, how you tell the difference, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny that you said that. The reason why I knew balsamic was on the other side is I actually went to a place in Savannah that was that. It was like an olive oil store or something. My wife and I were just like walking. It was summertime, so it was pretty hot. And we were like pretty far away from the Airbnb, and we're just like, an olive oil store? Like, all right, let's go in and check it out. We ended up like standing there for like 45 minutes talking to the guy. He was telling us about these olive oils, trying out balsamic like vinaigrettes and stuff. And man, we ended up buying a bunch of like vinaigrettes. One was like with onions. One was like jalapeno It opened up a can of worms, but I never thought that day. I never said to myself, I'm going to go out and buy some custom balsamic vinaigrette.
Like, man, yeah.
Just that the thought never passed my mind. But it was interesting learning about that stuff because, yeah, you can tell like different things came from different parts of the world, and this is the way that this interacts with this, and this is the flavor profile. It's like, I thought this was fucking olive oil, but apparently there's more to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole world of olive oil, and it's apparently olive oil and the food industry in general is one of the most fraudulent industries.
What do you mean?
Olive oil used to be controlled and may still be controlled by the mafia.
Really?
Yeah, by the agro mafia. Yeah. So they dilute the olive oil, they sell it as extra virgin or whatever, and you're really not getting what you pay for. So that's why there's so many of these olive oils popping up all over the place.
Like, you can't quell the olive oils. Yeah. They're popping up everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You never know what kind of olive oils you're going to get. But yeah, I mean, if you get the right olive oils, they're high in antioxidants. They're high in good fats. They're high in oleocanthals, which are good for fighting cancer. It's actually...
Really?
Yeah, it attacks and it breaks down tumors.
So is that part of why like going into like a ketogenic diet or something like that is what some of these different cancer guys, like these different guys recommend if you were going to try to maybe not get rid of cancer, but like alkalize your body or something, like make your body not so fertile for cancer?
I mean, because
I know it's a high fat diet, right?
I wish I could tell you. I don't know that answer.
We need the answers.
Yeah, that's right. Well, why don't you know all these things? Come on.
Damn,
we started
it.
Talking about UVC and coronavirus. Now we're talking about the keto diet and the benefits of olive oil.
Yeah, I know. I figured I'd take a swing at it. I started doing like some keto stuff, but I've kind of fallen off the wagon with that. I really didn't even fully approach it. I kind of just like cut out some sugar and things like that just to try to...
Yeah, it's not an easy diet, I don't think, to get acclimated to. It's probably easier than most diets because, you know, your fats and your proteins, it's all you eat.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, yeah, I could do steak and chicken every night, bacon and avocados.
Whatever the hell else.
You can't do any of those carbs or sugars or anything like that, though. So it's like, it's very familiar, I would think. So a lot of people are... I think easy to pick it up.
Yeah.
But to actually do it right is difficult.
Yeah.
Not saying that I've ever tried it, but speaking through other people who have done it around me, it seems like a very difficult thing to do. Probably
seems
not
like
best for you to do forever.
No.
Since it's a bunch of protein and fat and not really great for your arteries.
It seems like a nightmare to do, honestly. Just like trying to stick with it, it seems awful. But I heard it's like good to do like in cycles if you just do it for a little bit and then go to something else. I don't know. Again,
that would be a question for
this is all things
Natalie.
That I've heard on podcasts and I've read in different books. And pretty much that reading was just little snippets of it. So I basically have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, that makes two of us for the keto diet, at least.
So like, well, I definitely want to touch on the webinar that you guys are doing. So what is that? Like, what is it all about?
So we are going to be doing a webinar coming up in November. It's going to be kind of the first just educational webinar that just talks about indoor air quality. So the things that we mentioned today with coronavirus, with, you know, the need for better indoor air. We're going to be touching base on, you know, what are the standards, because there's obviously standards that have been involved. And a lot of those standards point to ventilation, whether it's UVC, other ways of ventilating. And I'll go through all the technology and the research that I've done to show you, like, okay, we'll touch bases with HEPA filters, what negative ion generators do and don't do, what over and under pressure systems or positive and negative pressure systems do, UVC, upper room germicidal devices. What else? There's a lot else. Other UV products. There's other UV products out there, but like I said, you have to have those requirements. So knowing these things would be really helpful for the future of businesses, of, you know, families, individuals as a whole. I think if everyone can know these better, then we can make better informed decisions.
Sure.
You know, for ourselves, for our business, for the safety of our kids, students, faculty, employees, whatever it may be. So what we're planning on doing is, you know, having this webinar. Hopefully we can throw something out there nice to the first few people who join. It's not up yet, but you can always, you know, keep an eye on Energy Harness's website.
Sure.
And we'll have it posted up there.
Okay.
If you want to be on the email blast for it, you can always reach out to me. I'll make sure that you get it.
Cool.
I'll share
a bunch of this stuff in the show notes too. And then plus when you guys go to release the webinar, I'll throw like a post on LinkedIn and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But so if somebody, so let's say like somebody that works somewhere listens to that, they're like, oh, okay, this is cool. Or, you know, they might be pissed about the mask stuff, whatever their motivation might be. Like, let's say I learn about this and like I work somewhere. Like, who are the types of people at companies, at schools, at, well, probably, well, I guess hospitals maybe, but like, what are the positions that actually like make these kinds of decisions? Like, what are those titles? So if somebody found out that they are interested in this stuff and like, oh, we could probably use this here. Everybody's worried about going back to work and back to office, all that stuff. Like, who are the different roles that usually handle this kind of decision?
That is a good question. It depends on really what business you work at, where you are. Your managers would probably be the first one to bring this up to. Managers bring it up to, you know, directors, operations of facilities probably is the best place to go. Purchasing, things like that, who make those decisions. But, you know, it's eventually going to end up probably in a board or, you know, a large committee of either operations, facility maintenance, things like that. Those are the people who really need to know most about it. And they are aware of UVC. I think they're not, you know, unaware of the technology. However, I think everything has just been jammed down their throats so much. They're sick of hearing it.
Yeah.
Which I don't blame them. So for schools, for instance, you know, if you're a parent, you know, talk to the school board, to let them know of these other opportunities that are, you know, here that are local. In fact, you know, I didn't mention this, but it's really important to say we make all these here in Cape Coral, Florida. Those UVC devices, yeah, they're American made. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. America.
America.
That's right.
Okay, so you guys have like a whole plant up in Cape Coral?
Yeah, it's a warehouse. It's a manufacturing site, you know, for our UVC devices and some LED products as well. So yeah, we have a whole production team room dedicated just for UVC all day long.
Whoa. Okay. Yep. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
All right. Interesting.
Come visit us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, honestly, at some point, so are you based up in Cape Coral?
I'm out of Estero right now.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I make the commute.
Okay, yeah. Cool. I'm in Estero too. So I get the commute, but damn. So you're going to Cape Coral every day?
Yeah. I do a little bit everywhere. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Being in sales, you're kind of all over, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Could consult with businesses, you know, from basically Marco Island all the way up to Port Charlotte. We just added a member in Tampa. We have a team in Indiana, and we also have a member in Georgia. So,
okay,
we're kind of all, you know, we cover the whole East Coast pretty well. So we can handle really any inquiries. I've had meetings with people all the way from New Mexico. Inquiries come in from California. Yeah.
Okay. So like, and you were explaining some of this when we first met, like what the process is like of going in places and kind of, I don't want to say diagnosing, but like really kind of troubleshooting what they've got, what they're looking to do, kind of the impacts. You were even talking about like the effects it has on your mood. You're talking about the UV lights.
Oh, the LEDs.
Yeah. Yeah. All that kind of stuff. I mean, I didn't know anything about that. So how do you feel like your background in the bioengineering, like what, I don't know, advantage or what impact does that have on the process of sales, of even just the consultations? Like, do you feel like that, what impact do you feel like that has on you and your ability to go and do these things?
That's a good question. I definitely feel that in order for me to provide value to the people that I work with and the clients and the customers that we have, is I want to not only, you know, I'm not just I am in sales, so I do sell the product, but it's more important for clients to be educated, to understand where this information is coming from, because I can say this all I want without backing it up.
Sure.
Is, you know, another thing. So I do a lot of research on my own time, whether it's UVC or LED lighting. For instance, we were talking about the lighting for schools, education centers. You know, there are reasons why LED is recommended for every education center across the country, across Florida. In fact, if you look in the Florida Department of Education, they say that the first thing you should look at is the light emitting diode, LED. Otherwise, you know, don't put in fluorescents. It's just, it's old technology. It won't even be here a few years from now.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
But in that case, in the school's cases.
Yeah. So why do they say that?
Yeah. So the reason why they say that is they realize that there are so many beneficial effects that LEDs can have in a learning setting. So we'll put it this way. The research that I've read basically states that no environment is a neutral environment, meaning you are affected by everything that's around you.
Okay.
From the food that you eat, to the air that you breathe, to the paint that's on the walls, to the lighting that's in the room. So you don't think about it on a regular basis. It probably doesn't even cross your mind, maybe a few times in your life.
Yeah.
But, you know, the colors of the wall, they have an effect on your mood. The lighting above you also has an effect on your mood, your attention, how you feel.
Yeah.
Just generally, you know, for student purposes, fluorescents compared to LEDs, when you look at a fluorescent, they cause irritation in your eyes because of the frequency that continuously happens. So the fluorescent bulb actually, excuse me, the fluorescent actually flickers and you don't notice that. But when it's happening so fast, so your brain actually fills in the gaps of the light. So if you were to slow it down, you know, you would notice a flickering. And say your brain wasn't doing that. And actually in people who have mental illnesses or like autism, things like that, their brain doesn't compensate for those
flickers.
So they see it and they're affected by it worse than the average person.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you have like autism or something like that and you're in a place with fluorescent lighting, it's like that much more of a learning like disability, or in that case, a disadvantage.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Whoa. Yeah. And it goes all the way back to basically that causes you to be tired. It causes you headaches. It's irritating and you don't even realize it.
Yeah.
And then, not only that, but there's glare, which in recent studies show that, you know, glare is one of the reasons why students lose focus in a room. Glare off whiteboards, off the wall, off their desk, on the paper.
Really?
Sometimes it's hard to read. If you've ever looked at their paper and you see like a hot spot basically in glare, you can't even see the letters sometimes. You got to move around.
Yeah.
So you get that out of the way. With LED, it's less. There's a lot less glare. There's none of that flickering. Your mind doesn't have to work hard to fill in those
compensate
gaps.
Compensate for it.
Yeah. And then it also can improve just focus levels at different color temperatures, per se. So if you wanted a soft, calm environment, you went with a 30 to 35,000 K light. If you wanted something, attention, you wanted people to focus, 40K to 45K. If you wanted like daylight, which is used for accurate color renderations, that's 50K. So say you were painting art, and I'm not a very good person to say this because I'm colorblind, but say you are you're wanting a true red.
Sure.
And you're like, okay, this is a true red, or you have like a whole panel of reds here. Which one's the true red? You may not be able to discern it because 50K, and this is not the best example. Better example, if you were outside at night, let's say, and you know how sometimes cars look like they're black at night,
yeah,
they're really like a dark blue or something.
Yeah.
In a 50K light, it would look dark blue. It would not be black. You would see it for the color that it is. Is basically the point,
because
it's like daylight. It's supposed to be like full spectrum of light.
Got it. Yeah, the only, like I started kind of understanding some of this, like with the lighting in here and with the cameras and these different things that you got to kind of match the lights to the camera setting,
right?
And all this stuff. I'm still kind of figuring some of that stuff out, but it was really interesting to think of different lighting temperatures. And yeah, I guess it makes sense. It would affect your mood in person because it affects the mood on the.
Right.
Recorded footage.
Yeah.
Oh.
But it's a lot more involved than what people, I think...
Realize,
yeah. And not only to mention, you know, if you're putting in LEDs, this is the other side of that we try to... or that I highlight it with my customers, is that we're having the wattage usually. So you take a fluorescent bulb, you convert it to an LED. Typically, the wattage is going down by at least 50 to 75%, which means that you see in your electric bill about a 50 to 75% decrease in wattage use, therefore decrease in what you have to spend. So that's attractive.
Yeah.
So basically the lights in a year, and like it depends on what the situation is, but you know, it could be a year, could it be 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, will pay for themselves.
Yeah.
If we're lowering that wattage.
Sure.
So it's financially a great decision for businesses, as well as for the well-being of the people who are underneath the lights and are exposed to them at all times. If you're a school, whatever, it has those different different benefits that apply to you.
Got it. So you kind of go, so when you're going through these different consultation periods, you're assessing basically what they've got, I guess in both cases, now that you say it, the lighting and the air quality front, and just going through and basically assessing, okay, here's what you've got. Do you ever kind of go in depth on these things, or does it kind of depend on the particular person you're talking? It's, I guess, sales. So it depends on the person you're talking to.
My engineering background makes me want to get real in depth with things because I want people to understand it like I do. I want, because that's how I first, I try to, you basically put it in basic terms, because when you're learning things, it's not easy to just get, you know, throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. But what I try to do is break it down as simple as I can, saying these are the benefits that you can see. These are the reasons. This is the research that backs it up. And, you know, not everyone wants to hear the specifics of it. Maybe they already know. So it just
depends. Or they don't know and they don't particularly want to know.
Yeah. You might run into some people like that. Yeah.
It's kind of funny that you say that. It's a weird part of sales, because I think more kind of like what you're saying, like when I go to sell something or I understand something, like I don't just want to sell because I don't feel like a salesperson. I feel like I want to be like a partner with that person. So I want to, I want them to understand what I understand. So that way I don't have to really sell it to you. You would just kind of see what I'm seeing. You would see the value, but that was a big thing in sales that I had to get over. Like working at the last company that I was at, it was selling aircraft maintenance tracking software. So it's a technical,
it's very cool.
It's a technical sale. And part of it too, that I would see is like, oh my God, you can reduce paperwork by this much. You don't have to double paperwork. You can do this. If you got the iPad, you can take a picture of this where normally you'd have to scan it and then you'd have to staple it to a piece of paper, throw it in a binder. You could take care of all that and it lives forever digitally, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Thanks. And you, I'm good.
Yeah. Thanks. Goodbye. I don't know. What has it been like to kind of maneuver that part of your brain and find that middle ground?
Well, it's always a learning experience, I think. I've been in this role for over 6 months now. So
That's it?
Yep.
Holy shit, yep, man.
I spent a lot of time researching.
I honestly,
that's for sure.
I thought you have been there for like 3 years or something.
No, it's I'm still, I guess you could consider me a new salesman. It's still underneath a year. But
you know your shit, dude.
Well, it's important. It's important to know what you're talking about, because I don't like not understanding these concepts. I don't know, like, if I can't explain it to someone, how are they supposed to understand it? How are they supposed to feel comfortable, feel confident in their decisions? Because at the end of the day, they're making the decision. I mean, they are, it's only going to benefit them. So, you know, why they need to have that knowledge, that know-how of how it is going to benefit them, how these things do affect their life or their business. It's more than just lighting and air quality. It's important. It's extremely important. So yeah, I guess to answer your question is, it's always a learning experience, and I'm still learning, doing my best. and it's enjoyable though. I like the consulting approach. I like helping businesses. I think that's the goal. I think we all want to see, especially local businesses, do extremely well.
Yeah. I mean, what are some of the cool, like, do you get to like go into some like cool businesses or cool spaces and like do these kind of assessments and things?
Every once in a while, yeah. I mean, all the businesses are different. So I've definitely seen some interesting places that I wouldn't normally get to see. Sure. I'm like, huh, this is really neat what you guys do here. And I'm always just learning new information about what other people do. And it's exciting for me to learn a bit. Sometimes it's about manufacturing. Sometimes it's sports. Could be, you know, could be anything. Could be a restaurant.
Yeah.
Could be, you know, law firm, laundromats. There's just a whole wide gambit of
things, businesses.
Of businesses, of industries that they all really need, first of all, lighting. And then a majority of them will probably need something for their indoor air.
Yeah. Well, and it's part of it's cool too, because you can start to see, you start to see the world as a slightly bigger picture, you know, and like you can see like different people in different roles at different company, and like they're just living their life, but part of their life is being part of that particular mission. Like, I guess the best way I can say it is like when I was doing the aviation stuff, I got to go to hangars and I got to meet with people in these private hangars that had like private jets, you know, for their businesses or for the owners of the jets that they were taking care of. And you kind of got to step into their world and be around this stuff.
That's pretty cool.
Some of it was badass. Like,
yeah,
I got to go like to an Air Force base. That was sweet. I got to go, I won't say the city that it was in, but I got to...
I was about to say, are you allowed to disclose that information?
Well, no.
Like, you should have seen the machines they had there.
So let me tell you exact geographic locations that they were at. But there was another place I got to go to that they walked us around. The guy took us onto like a Boeing 747 that was like all decked out with stuff. And it was really cool being able to go to these different places. I think that was one of the coolest things that I enjoyed about that sales process, was just the different kind of opportunities that I got to go to these places that, like you said, that you would otherwise never go to. Like, no one would just let you walk into like a manufacturing plant or something like that. But
right,
you've got a reason to be there. You kind of have a value that you can bring, or at least give them info. And I think when, at least as like a younger salesperson, when I was going through it, it was kind of cool just to have that opportunity. It's like, shit, even if I wasted all this time or I didn't like make the sale, it was like, it was cool to interact with these people. And it was cool that I got to have that experience. Like, I won't forget that. And that gives me insight to something that, I don't know, 99.9% of people may never get to experience. And I just got to, because I was there for a reason.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then at the end of the day, it's, you know, those experiences, as well as really knowing that you provided value to someone, you helped someone,
yeah,
either financially or you know, emotionally. You know, all different sales have different values, or different companies give different values. But you know, being able to say, I did this for this business, or I helped this business get to this point. You know, I didn't do this for this business, but
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I was a proponent in the business having this happen, you know, or improving their air quality so people are safe. That's important. I mean, that to me is very rewarding.
Yeah.
And that's what I think it makes it at the end of the day very, very happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, hey, man, I'm glad we did this. This is fucking awesome, man.
Yeah.
I learned a ton of stuff today. Yeah. So
thank you for having me on.
Yeah, for sure, dude. We'll probably do this again at some point, but so if you can tell everybody just quickly how they can find you, find the company, quick recap on the webinar, and then from there I'll take all of your info, I'll put it in the show notes, so if people are listening they can just go down, find your info. And so where can people find you?
Yeah, I guess the best way to find us at Energy Harness is to go online to our website, energyharness.com, and you can see all the LED products, UVC, on there. You can actually send an inquiry as well through the website, or you can call us, you know, at our number. You can call me directly, and I can link those at the end as well, or email me. But yeah, we're located right here in Cape Coral, Florida, so we're very proud to be a local manufacturer. There's not too many of those here.
Yeah.
Yeah, take a look at us. You know, we're welcome to show you around the shop, show you some of the lighting products, a little bit of, tell you a little bit more about UVC. We've got them hooked up all all in our offices, you know, keeping everyone safe.
And then how about connecting with you?
Connecting with me? I'm on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to reach out to me is through LinkedIn.
Cool.
Not going to give you my personal number. So LinkedIn would probably be the best. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, hell yeah. Absolutely. All right. Lorenzo Batista. That would probably help.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sure. All right, Lorenzo. Thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a good night.
Thanks, man. Awesome.
Sweet. Hell yeah.